Welcome to Season 10 of Talking with Traders as we begin 2025. We're into the fifth year of this podcast that began in 2020, and we've just surpassed 200,000 downloads of Talking with Traders. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we welcome back to the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in various areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its fifth year. And thank you, listeners, for your continued support. Now, let's get into this week's interview. Welcome back to another episode of Talking with Traders. And this time we head across to the USA. And I've got Anmol Singh from LiveTraders.com joining me today. Anmol, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise. I've been looking forward to speaking to you too. So as I always do with any new guests when we get them onto this podcast, is just a little bit of background. Give us a bit of your story, how you got involved in the markets, how long have you been trading for, and a little bit of a sort of a summary, I suppose, of your career up until this point.
Definitely. So I started trading in 2010, so on my 15th year now. Right. And started very early. I was 18 years old in my college days. And I was like a, you know, typical introvert, always on the computer playing Xbox or something. So yeah. It was very natural for me to do something on the computer. Right. I don't have to deal with office politics or, you know, talk to anybody. So that was just that. I substituted the Xbox for, you know, a computer and started learning how to trade, made a lot of mistakes my first year. Yeah. I lost money my whole first year. And then finally figured out like the psychology aspects of it and how much they play into our decision making. Mm. So I started trading for a prop firm. You know, I was trading their capital. In exchange, they would take a percentage of everything that I made. I did that for about, I would say, till about 2015. Traded with them for about 5 years. And that's how I got into coaching. So the CEO of the company called me and said, hey, you know, you're doing really well in a program, but some of the newer traders are struggling. So why don't you come in and do like a weekly session and coach all the newer hires that they had coming right. into the company. Right. So that's how I got into coaching as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they got bought out in 2015. And that's when I, you know, started LiveTraders.com.
Okay. All right. So LiveTraders.com has been going, what is this, your 10th year then?
Correct. Yeah. 2015. Yes. That's right.
Okay. All right. Super. I'm interested in what you said about when you joined a prop firm in the early part of your career. Was that easy to get into the prop firm, or did you have to go through quite a rigorous sort of vetting process to get in?
Yeah, no, it was easy to get in, but it was harder to progress. So in the beginning, they would put all the new people on like a demo account, right? So you don't get any real money. So you don't make any money too. You have to prove yourself in that account first. Yeah. And then they give you a certain amount of targets. And as you hit those targets, then they give you a little bit of money. And then they put like, you know, loss limits in your account as well. You can only lose X amount per day or per week or per month. And then after that is the hard work, because to progress up the levels, right? In the beginning level, you might only get $20,000, $30,000 to trade all the way up to like $10 million at level 9, level 10.
Right.
So I got to about that level. I think getting in, the foot in the door is easy, but proving yourself and hitting those targets, that's where the hard work comes in.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of my discipline I attribute to my early days, because having that structure of you can only lose X amount. Otherwise, the platform is not going to stop working. It'll just lock you out. You'll get logged off. Yeah. So that forced discipline, I attribute a lot of my success to, and which is why I think most traders fail, is because they don't have that structure. They don't have any loss limits or anything like that. Just keep trading and dig yourself in a hole.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get into that about what you know most successful traders do and what the unsuccessful ones also get wrong. But that early part where you said you know you're only funded with a small amount of capital, are they paying you anything at that stage, or how do you survive in those early days? If you are they paying you something at least, or nothing at all?
No, it was eat what you kill. So whatever you make, you get a percentage of that. So if you don't make anything, you don't get paid. And I think that's a definite element of risk. But I'm glad that I started that in college because there's not a lot of expenses. You don't have to take care of
Sure.
anybody. You're already in your dorm room,
Yes.
get a
Yeah.
few hundred bucks. You can still have a good time.
Yeah.
So that's definitely was a beneficial thing for me, starting very early. I know not everybody will have that. If you're already married, you got kids, you got a family, you got to make something off trading.
Yeah.
But I think for me, just that was a big difference maker.
Yeah, okay, that is fortunate. And I mean, in terms of the prop firm like what you're referring to, I mean, I presume it's a physical prop firm. You went into a dealing room that gave you a computer and a desk and a, Bloomberg or whatever you needed, right? Resources to do the job. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's quite different to what many people think of a prop firm as these days, right? We've got a lot of these funding firms which now have become very popular, where you go through all sorts of challenges and what have you to get to a certain point before they'll then actually give you some real money to trade with, et cetera, et cetera. And some of these funding firms, let's say, have not all got the best reputation. I mean, can you just give us a bit of an idea, your perspective on it, with the type of prop firm you started out at versus what we're seeing nowadays?
Yeah, the business model nowadays is very different to what it used to be. Like back in the day, like prop firms were legit. They were actually firms that would teach you their strategies and everything, and they'd want you to make money because the only way they made money is if you made money because they get a percentage off of everything you make. These days, the model has completely changed. I don't think there's probably any good like prop firms left. Maybe there's one or two that I'm not aware of, but I don't think there's any good ones left anymore. Nowadays, it's just glorified, as you said, funding programs where they don't really care if you make money or not. Right, they already get paid up front because you pay up a little bit to join or their funding challenge or whatever. So they're basically in essence selling a program, right? And they're getting money off that. They don't really care if you make money or not. They're not really providing any coaching or they don't. So back then, though, as I said, the only way was for you to make money. That's how the company made money. Nowadays, they're just glorified brokers, meaning they're getting kickbacks from brokers. So they don't care if you make money or not. You just keep trading. They just want you to keep trading because you generate more commissions for them. And then the broker is going to give them a little bit of a kickback out of everything that you're trading. So it's a lot, the models change a lot. A lot of them are located offshore and they have bad reputation. They come and go, they shut up, a new firm comes in. So there's a lot of shady business. I don't really recommend that to people nowadays.
Yeah, I certainly kind of echo that, and I've heard it from a lot of other people as well, similar line of thinking. When you were in the prop firm in New York that you talked about, and where you were doing well, and ultimately got approached to start, helping and coaching some of the younger traders that were coming in the door, at that stage, I guess there's always probably a queue of people out the door waiting to get a foot in a prop firm, right? Did you have a rigorous selection process to go through to select some of your hires at that stage? And if so, what were some of the characteristics that you most commonly looked for in youngsters coming into the prop firm and getting their feet in the door?
Yeah, I think it was just looking at it from a perspective of mindset. So if they had any previous experience or didn't have any experience, that wasn't not a, a factor in deciding because oftentimes people who already come with some knowledge are harder to coach or harder to train in new ways of trading and new ways of coaching because they've already learned so many different indicators and all these things they want to use. So it's a harder time for them to adapt to because the firm wants you to do, either their strategy or something similar. Right. So we only looked at the mindset piece, who's coachable, who can be trained, and also who's good at following instructions. Right. If a task is given to you, can you go ahead and do it? Just like a job. If your boss tells you what to do, your ability to actually do what he says is going to determine your success. So we basically look for an open mind, the willingness to learn how coachable they were. So a lot of the questions will be based around, their ability to retain information and coachable and following instructions. As long as they could do that, all the other things can be coached and trained. But I think we just looked for people who didn't have much of a big ego, or they're not coming into trading for the wrong reasons, meaning like they just want to make a good amount of money. That's never a good reason, right? And that always will show up in your psychology later down the line. So we primarily just look for the basics, coachable, open mind, willingness to learn, how friendly they are, less ego, like all that stuff.
All right. And I suppose people that are not going to be, not going to be toxic to the environment.
Yeah.
Oh, nice to be surrounded by likable people, I suppose, when you're all working in a close quarters like that. And nowadays, I mean, I know you're a coach now as well. And we'll talk about your service at livetraders.com in a bit. But the style of trading that you employ nowadays, I mean, tell us a little bit about that. Are you a intraday trader or swing trader, position trader? You know what? Just tell us a little bit about your style of trading.
Definitely. So, I do all styles of trading, right? Because in my opinion, I don't like to put myself in a bucket or in a label, like I'm a day trader or I'm a swing trader or I'm a long-term trader. Because then you're putting yourself in a bucket. I
Right.
go wherever the opportunity shows up. So
Okay.
sometimes there's an opportunity I see for a quick day trade, I'll do that. Some days there's nothing good out there. Like today was one of those examples. I didn't like anything, so I didn't really day trade. But then I
Right.
saw some trades that were potentially for the next 3 weeks or so are going to be good ones.
Yeah.
So then I call myself more like an opportunist. Wherever there's opportunity, I'll go.
Right.
Sometimes opportunity shows up on a 2 minute chart or a 5 minute chart for a quick day trade, then we'll do that. Sometimes the opportunity is on a daily, weekly, monthly chart for more longer term stuff, so I'll do that too. And then sometimes I see an options that could be better suitable for this strategy, then I'll do
Right.
that. And
Yeah.
then sometimes when crypto is pulling back into some support recently, as we saw a few days ago, then I saw an opportunity in crypto. So that's why I don't call myself like a stock trader or a crypto trader or a bonds trader. Wherever the chart patterns and the opportunities set up, that's kind of where I usually go to. And
Okay.
I also believe that I think to do this professionally as a living, right? And if you have other sources of income, great, you can do all the sorts of trading you want. But if
Yeah.
you're doing this for a living and your only goal is to make income and live off what you make from trading, I don't think anybody can just rely on one style. I think you have to have all different buckets going for you.
Yeah, that makes sense. To that extent, are you a, well, look, I mean, I suppose I know the answer because you run livetraders.com, which is a coaching service, and you've got a variety of offerings there. So maybe the question is a bit moot, but I wanted to ask anyway, are you a trader that eats what you kill? In other words, your ability to pay the bills at the end of every month is really dependent on whether you're profitable or not as a trader, or do you rely on these other sort of risk-free income sources, things like coaching and what have you, to pay the bills?
Yeah, great question. So I think majority of that is still to do with trading, but honestly, nowadays I'm set myself in a position over these 15 years that if I don't get anything this month, like it's not a huge deal, right? I have like 11 rental properties that I get rent from, right? I have startup companies that I get dividends from. I get my long-term investments that pay me. I have some crypto that I'm staking that generates income as well on that. And then obviously I have live traders, the coaching and the training business, and then advising hedge fund managers, or I might go and speak at a conference that they might pay me 50,000 to come and speak for an hour. So there's a lot of sources now, but I would still say I still actively day trade, and my goal is like at least the basic my bills and everything. I try to pay it off trading, and then all the other things like coaching and all, I consider that as like a bonus. So I got a little bit extra on top because of coaching. And then I'll usually take that and I'll invest it in like real estate or long-term stocks or something. But yeah, the paying the expenses and the bills still primarily from trading. And I kept it that way because it keeps me focused. I think if I take my foot off the pedal, I have a good momentum. I just want to keep that going. As I've seen with traders that take a little break for a year or two and then they come back and they just don't have it anymore. So I never want to disconnect myself to the markets.
It's always an interesting question that I ask a lot of the guests that come on the show, because very few people I find are total traders that just eat what they kill. There are some, but a lot of the guests that I get on here do have their fingers in a couple of different pies. And I mean, I include myself in that, where you've got a few different income streams. Because generally speaking, I think that to purely rely on your trading for the whether you're going to actually put food on the table and pay the bills at the end of the month is an inordinate amount of pressure for most people. So if you've, and as I guess, like somebody like yourself, if you've got a property portfolio or variety of other things that pay you some sort of a passive income, I guess that must also help you to be in the right kind of headspace to trade with less pressure, I guess.
Absolutely, because you make better decisions when you don't have to make it, right?
Yeah.
When you don't have to make the money, then you end up making the right decisions, more better decisions and objective decisions. When you're pressured, like you got to pay your bills this month and you can only make it from trading, then sometimes you make bad decisions to just make up that money.
Yeah.
So I always tell people, like, don't just quit your job and come here. unless you have savings saved up for like 6 months of leeway or something saved up, then it's okay. But I think majority of the reasons why people can't do, as I said, make money just from trading, and they have to have all these other things, not only the pressure aspect, but also a lot of people's styles are very small, like they're only day trading or they're only swing trading. There's only one tool belt, one pattern they're looking for. And obviously that pattern's not going to show up all the time, right? So you have to wait for the pattern to show up. So you go through periods without opportunity. And that's why I tell people, like, if you're going to do this for a living, you have to have all these styles working together. Because then some months, for example, last 2 weeks, day trading wasn't that great for me, right? I made some money, but I wouldn't be able to live off that, right? Day trading wasn't that great for me, but a lot of my swing trades and my options trades ended up making money. So I ended up getting to the same level point. And 4 or 5 months ago, swing trading, my swing trades weren't really going, or I was still in a position, so I didn't sell it. So I didn't get a profit out of that. So swing trading weren't making many money, but day trading was going really well, right? Or sometimes crypto is going really well. So I think when you have all these buckets, then one bucket's not working, at least the other one's working. So that's kind of the approach people need to have.
That makes sense. Okay. And I want to talk a bit about risk. Obviously we all know that your ability to manage risk in this game is absolutely vital, and often is actually your, determining factor in whether you're successful or not as a trader. When it comes to risk, how do you approach it? Do you have a fixed amount that you're willing to lose on each trade, or does that amount vary depending on the level of volatility in the market, or and also when it comes to position sizing, how do you approach all of that?
Yeah, so I'll give you two answers to this. One is the correct answer, right? And one is the honest answer. So the correct answer is to keep your risk the same on every single trade, right? That's kind of what I teach all the time. And that's what I did primarily for, I would say, probably my first 10 years or so, I did that, right? So that's how I build the discipline and the account size, is to keep the risk the same, because then it's all a numbers game. If all of your losses are the same, and it's just a numbers game, right? Either you make more on the winners or you have more winning trades, and then you're going to make money. But the problem happens is when people are not experienced and they start risking different amounts. So on one trade, they're risking $1,000, next trade, they're doing $10,000. With that, you can mess up the ratio. Because let's say all your losing trades, winning trades happen with $1,000 of risk, and then the losing one happens with 10,000. Now you just screwed your whole statistic. Whereas if that loser was also 1,000, you'd still be positive. So that's the right thing to do, and that's what I did for majority of my career. Even now, I would say 90%, that's kind of what I do, right? 10% of the time, I might get like one of those trades that I'm like, this is really good. Or for example, just a couple of days when Ethereum dropped to like 2,000 or whatever, I was like, okay, this is a good buy point for at least a trade, and it'll go up. So on some of those type of trades, now and again, I might risk more than what I normally do on all the others, but still, 90% of the time, it's exact same risk level on every single trade. So we call that a risk unit, right? So your risk unit is $1,000, and you buy a stock at 20, it goes down to 19 is your stop loss. You're risking $1 per share. So if you want to risk $1,000, you buy 1,000 shares. So 90, 95% of my trades, I do the exact same risk, even now. But 5 or 10%, I allow myself to do that. But that's also because I've been in it 15 years. There's a level of feel that you develop that newer traders will not have. You don't have a gut feel, so don't try to do that right now.
That makes sense. You've got a you got the experience to go with it. And I want to talk to you about routine. A lot of guests that I interview seem to have a fairly disciplined routine in terms of the way they research over weekends or before the market opens in the morning, and then have a post-market routine. Some have an intraday routine. Do you have any specific routine that you stick to rigidly in your trading?
Yes and no. So I have a routine, but it's basically from 9 o'clock till about noon. That's it. Like after what I do can change all the time, right? So my typical routine is I'll get up, I'll get myself a cup of coffee, right? I'll have some hydration water. I'll come to my desk typically about 9 o'clock, right? 8:50 sometimes, 8:45 to 9 o'clock. I'll be on my trading desk. And then for the first, I would say till about 8:45 till about 9:10, 9:15, I'm just looking at what's gapping up, what's gapping down, right? What stocks are opening higher, what are opening lower. If there's something that had earnings, I'll just kind of start building like a watch list. I try to keep it about 10 stocks that I'm going to look for day trading opportunities, right? So then I'll look at those. And then around 9:05, I live stream into our live traders community and I do a pre-market review from 9:05 till about 9:30.
Okay.
We'll review all of those stocks that I looked at, what my plan is, what I'm looking for, where do I want to see it get above, right? And we'll do the whole market analysis. And then from 9:30 till 11 o'clock, I'll be live streaming and I'll be trading live in the chat room. And win or lose, people get to see it in real time what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then yeah, and then typically I try to be done by trading, like day trading, by 11, right?
Okay.
And then 11 to 12, just be like, answering questions in the chat room
Okay.
or looking at my position that I'm already in terms of swing trades, just kind of monitor that. Do I need to raise my stop loss or whatever? But then typically 12 o'clock, I stop trading, like I'm done. I might just look at my swing trades now and again, see what they're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the typical routine. And at night, I usually put on my headphones, and then sometimes I might be browsing through X or Twitter or seeing it what's maybe news coming on something or if a stock's doing something. But yeah, those are not really routine. They could be all times of the day.
Okay. All right. Super. And journaling, is that something that you do
Not
much?
anymore,
Right.
but I did that probably for the first 13 years of my career.
Right.
So I used to. There's a few things I used to do. One, I used to actually record myself, my camera on me, and my screen at the same time. So I can see when I'm making those stupid decisions, like what my emotion state was. And you can
Right.
see it where you're supposed to hold on to a trade to a target, and then you're feeling jittery. You don't want to feel, want to sell it too soon. But if you record yourself, you'll see yourself like, kind of like that. That's how I noticed a lot of the triggers that I have. And I noticed that anytime I would make a trading mistake, I would be like leaning forward and like try to make something happen. And I'm best trading when I'm like calm and I'm leaned back and I'm just observing stocks. So I used to do all of that, not only video journal, physical journal. I would write down my thoughts and my emotions on, why I got out, what made me do this or that. So I did that for the first 13 years. I had three folders, a red folder with all my losing trades, right? I'm physically print them out. I would draw everything by hand, red folder with all my losing trades, green folder with all my winning trades, the charts, and then the blue folder of all the regrets or the trades I should have taken but I missed or I hesitated on. So I used to keep these for the first 10, 13 years. Now I don't do it. Now I just have a spreadsheet, which is a log of all my trades. And then I have my own journal, success journal, but that's more for like life related stuff. It's not really a trading journal. I write down, okay, what are the six things I need to do to move my life forward? I write those things down the night before. So when I wake up, I don't care about the world until I do those six things.
Interesting. And I mean, I'm just going to go off at a bit of a tangent here, but I mean, I'm intrigued about what you said about life goals and what have you. I mean, we know life happens, right? And some days you're just better than other days. You're in a better frame of mind, better mood, for whatever reason. And some days you're just not. Do you notice a correlation then between the way you trade the success or lack of success in your results, if you're sort of on a bit of a downer? It happens to all of us from time to time.
Oh, absolutely. Like it affects everything, right? Because the way your mindset is how you're going to show up. Either the fear will kick in, either the greed will kick in, or either you're just not in the zone. So you end up manufacturing trades, meaning there's nothing out there. There's no good setup. Nothing meets your trading plan, but you just make it up anyway, right? Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, it looks like a breakout. And then you just make stuff up. So I think, and you do that when you're either tired or you're emotionally not there. Or you're mad at something or angry at something. Usually I tell people, like, if you're not feeling 100%, just don't trade. Like, why risk your real money? Or completely take a risk down. So if your risk level is $1,000, 1 hour unit, bring it down to like $100, right? If you're not feeling it. So I think that is definitely something I suggest. And I've noticed that. In fact, research has proven it, right? The hormone spikes that you get, dopamine, serotonin, when you're actually trading live, the cortisol that's released when you're messing up or you're doing something wrong. All those affected, and I noticed that firsthand. This is like last year. Okay, I went to one of my doctors, and he's like, for your age, you should have a higher testosterone or whatever. You should try this testosterone, thing, replacement injection or whatever. I was like, I don't know. And one day I was like, okay, let me try it out. They gave me the testosterone thing. I was like, I didn't even think anything of it. And I noticed the next 2, 3 days how aggressive I was with my trading. It was the worst thing. I lost a lot of money. I stopped taking the testosterone. I never took it again because I lost a lot of money because I noticed that I was just like, it would make you think like you could do anything, nothing's going to go wrong. How could this stock do this to me? It's going to come back. And I was very aggressive with position sizing. So then I realized that is true, how these hormonal spikes can really affect your decision making. So going back to your point, if you're showing up mad, angry, tired, not feeling well, you had a late night out, it's all going to show up in your results. So if you're not feeling 100%, just don't trade that day.
Really, really interesting. And as a coach, you obviously see successful traders and you see unsuccessful traders. I guess people that come to you as a coach, I suppose you probably see a higher success rate because you're coaching them. But I mean, those numbers that a lot of the CFD providers have to publish by law in terms of the numbers of clients that lose money, we and IG Markets, for example, are the sponsor of this podcast. So I know I can say it. I mean, but at the moment, at the top of their website right now, they're publishing that 69% of their clients lose money trading leveraged products. And that's quite low by historical standards. You know, I've seen that number be up as high as 80% at certain times. At the moment, it's down at 69, but it seems to always fluctuate between around about 70% and 80% of clients that lose money. Is that your experience as well? Or do you generally find that, you know, the type of client that comes and actually seeks coaching is more likely to be successful because you're teaching them the right methods? And you know, to that extent, I mean, I'm sure there must be some people that come through the coaching program, they're still just not successful regardless. I don't know. Maybe there's some people that just can't be taught. I don't know. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, so there's two ways to answer the question. So the first answer is like that's like anything else in life, right? Majority, if you look at the business statistics, 70% of startups fail in the first 5 years. So again, 30% make it. Trading, the same thing. Sport, the same thing. Everybody can play golf, but not everybody's going to make it to the PGA. Everybody can play basketball, not everybody's going to be in the NBA. You know, you could be in your little club leagues, a great football player, but you're not going to make it to the English Premier League. So that's just life. Life just works in that way, where certain people will do it, certain will not. But as it relates to trading, the reason why I think the statistics is a little bit misleading is because it counts everybody who had an account and pushed the buy or sell button as a trader. But you and I both know that's not what a trader is. Anybody can buy it, open an account and buy something. My mom has a trading account. She can buy something. So in that statistic, they'll count her as a trader. But that's not really true. A real trader is somebody who has a system, who has a plan, who's back tested it, who's gone through years of training and coaching and trial and error and proved itself. So when you do the statistics on people who've been, let's say, doing it more than 3 years, how they're doing, I think it's going to be the complete opposite. 70, 80% are going to be making money. Because majority of the traders, because again, those statistics will count even the person who's on his first day as a trader in the statistic. But again, we all know first year, rarely anybody makes any money. And especially with CFDs and leverage products, because they don't have the, nobody's taught them how to use leverage the right way. Right? So they end up messing up.
It would actually be interesting now that you say that. It would be interesting if they actually published the stats in a different way. Said,
Right.
you know, this percentage of clients who've been with us for more than 5 years, you know, how
Correct.
many of them make money? Clients that have been with us between 2 and 3 years, how much of them
Right.
make money? It'd actually be quite an interesting thing. I mean, I'm sure, as you say, of course, the longer they've been around, well, more likely they will have been to be successful. Just the fact that
Right.
they're still there, right?
Yeah, because in our trading chat room, you know, there's 70% people are making money, right? So 30% are losing money. And if we do it even further, if you've been in this chat room for more than 2 years, how many of you are going to make money? It's like 85%. Right. So the ones that are not making money are typically in their first year, which makes sense because they're chasing, you know, still the shiny object of trading. They're still looking for the next alert service or something to do. And those are people just in the chat room, not even the ones that are coaching, right? Coaching, there's like a 90% success rate. But as you said, there's 10% that are never just, it's just life works that way. They just don't get it. It's been 3 years they're at it. Either they're not able to get themselves to follow the plan, so the psychology is holding them back. Majority of the issues are related to psychology because once you learn like a system that's been back tested, well, the system's working for everybody. Why is it not working for you? Did you not get out of the loser? Did you hold on to winner longer than you should have? Like, if you got to dive in, and usually, if you dig deep into somebody's statistics and their journal, you'll find the reason why they're not making it.
And in terms of the people that you see who are really successful, what couple of characteristics that really set them apart?
The ability to follow the checklist, right? So, for example, we have a lot of people in our community that are ex-pilots. They make for fantastic traders. Why? Because a pilot might have flown a plane 100,000 times in his life, but still, every single time, he'll go through the checklist, no matter how long he's been flying, how experienced he is. So, the ability to follow the checklist. Now, in trading, it's the same way. A system has a certain set of criteria. So, the people that are really good at it, they just follow all these instructions. They go through the checklist, make sure all the criteria is met, and then they take the trade. Often, other people might negotiate. Yeah, this one doesn't have that, but it still looks good. And they justify it, and then they don't follow the criteria. Ex-poker players make for great traders too. Why? Know when to hold it, know when to fold it. They already have the concept of risk management, right? Whereas average person who's coming from a job environment, they don't have a concept of risk management getting out. So I think so there are certain characteristics, but honestly, everything can be coached, everything can be trained as long as you just keep an open mind, because market is the market. It treats everybody the same way. You could be a successful CEO of a company, or you could be a janitor. Market's going to treat everybody the same way. It's the greatest meritocracy out there.
That's so true. All right, great. So we're getting sort of towards the end of our time, and I wanted to chat to you about your service, livetraders.com. Tell me about it. What do you get if you're a client? Give us some insight.
Yeah, definitely. So we have, something for everybody, at least the live traders. The key is we have three main things. So one of them is the live trading room. That's basically just I'm trading live every single day, Monday to Friday. I live stream every morning from 9 o'clock till 11 a.m. And then 11 o'clock, I get off, and one of the other coaches comes on, Stefan. He comes on from 11 to 12, and then 12 o'clock, we just keep the room open for you guys to chat. But during the stream, it's streaming, so you can see my face, you can see my audio, you can see my account, you can see the everything I'm doing. So it's like almost like sitting next to me. So I try to recreate the prop trading environment. It's just virtual. So that's one thing for people who want to day trade. If you don't day trade, don't come in there, right? That's strictly day trading. Then we have the newsletter. That's for more longer term investors, swing position traders, where we might hold a stock for a week, 2 weeks, maybe hold it for 3, 4 days, but longer than a day. Right. So that's the newsletter. And that is basically I'm just texting, emailing all the trades that I'm getting in and out in real time. But I provide the stop loss and all of that beforehand. And then all the trades are tracked in a spreadsheet. And then we have our mastermind group, which is more for people who already have some level of success. And that basically they get the newsletter, they get the live room, they get all the training courses that I've ever created. And then we do twice a month, we could do Zoom calls in a private community. And yeah, we. There's a lot of great people in there, people who are business owners, they run their own trading softwares or whatever. It's like a good group of people in the same industry. So those are the primary three things we offer. We have courses and all the other stuff, but people can learn more about that on the website, livetraders.com.
Livetraders.com. All right. So that's obviously where they can go. Where else can they follow your work? Are you on Twitter or LinkedIn?
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram, I would say I'm the most active on. My username on both of them is the same. It's Delta90, DeltaNinety. It's all spelled out. An option terminology. I had it a long time ago. Never changed it. But yeah, Delta90 on Instagram and Twitter. But yeah, otherwise, I'd love to give your listeners a free copy of my book. They can just go to go my name, unmold.net, and they can cover shipping, and then we'll just ship them out a free copy of the book.
Okay, brilliant. That's a great offer. Super. Well, thank you very much. All right. Well, that's it. I think we're out of time there, Anmol, but it's been excellent speaking to you. Thank you for your insights. And I'll have a look at the book, definitely. I'd like to sign up for that, and I'll follow you on Twitter and look forward to keeping in contact with you.
No, definitely. It was great chatting with you as well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Talking with Traders, sponsored by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a strong global provider of online trading services as our backer for this podcast series. Remember to subscribe for more episodes by clicking on the subscribe button of your favorite podcast app, or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and leave a comment. We welcome the engagement. Till next time.